Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. I'm looking down, looking around, trying to think, oh, geez, where are my notes here? Got them. Right here. They're right here all the time. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thanks for your belief and your trust in us. As we walk through this minefield of current events together, we have another treat for you right now. Our guest tonight on with us is Randall Terry. You know him. I know you know him. He's the founder of Operation Rescue. You know Coach Dave Dobmeier and Flip Benham and Operation Rescue. You know our guest. As a matter of fact, his website, voiceofresistance.org, he's done so many great videos, so much great work, at, of course, Voice of Resistance. Check that out. Before we bring him on, folks, let me tell you something here. I have never felt better. I don't know about you, but I know I have not had a cold. I have not had the flu this winter. Plus, I can actually, as I'm right before showtime, a couple hours before showtime, what I usually do is I take Cortisol Buster. This is Dr. Ted Brewer's formula. It is from healthmasters.com, Cortisol Buster. Now, if you haven't heard about this, cortisol helps your body resist and recover from the effects of everyday stress. It helps you focus, so you get de-stressed and you get more focused.
It's also a testosterone booster.
It is. I slipped some of this in my wife's coffee. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But components of this multifunctional formula have shown to support healthy cortisol levels. It alleviates fatigue. Man, there were times that I thought I had to take a nap in the afternoon. And I look at Donald Trump, and he's 70 years old out there, you know, just going, he's like the Energizer rabbit. I want to be that way. And you've heard Dr. Ted Brewer on the show. Well, his secret is Cortisol Buster. And I'm going to tell you right now, folks, I believe in this product. I've been taking it now for a while, and I'm going to take it right now. In addition to the multivitamin, which we always get from healthmasters.com, go to healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. And, use Doug5, D-O-U-G-5, in the promo code for 5% off. But this is the key. This is the ticket. In addition to your multivitamin, this is the ticket. This Cortisol Buster focus, de-stresses, relieves fatigue, increases energy. In fact, I'm so focused, I could see right into that camera, right through that camera, into your house. I'm watching you. Hey, you got a stain on your shirt. Just kidding, but I'm not kidding about Cortisol Buster. Healthmasters.com, healthmasters.com. Doug5 is the coupon code. So our guest is Randall Terry, voiceofresistance.org.
That's right.
And here's my question coming right out of the gate. And I had asked him this as we were bringing him on. So what question, you know, what's the first question that I should ask, that we should ask? And this is a great question because it's kind of obvious, but it's not so obvious. How does the founder of Operation Rescue, or how does a pro-life activist become a filmmaker about the scourge that is Islam? So I'm going to kick it to you. And how does that happen?
First of all, I want to thank you, Doug and Joe, for having me. It's a delight. And your reputation precedes you as a father-son tag team. I founded Operation Rescue in the mid-80s and have spent most of my adult life fighting for the unborn. And I still am active in the pro-life movement. I do a daily television show, similar to yours, and we're seen around the country on various TV stations, Christian stations. But when President Reagan died, I'll back up. After 9/11, I, like so many people in the media, because I had a radio show and a TV show at different points, I thought, I've got to study Islam. I have to study Islamic terrorism. And I really didn't know where to start. So, like most people, I started reading the Quran. And then I began to realize, first of all, I don't know what I'm reading, and that I had to be credentialed if I was going to be able to speak accurately and with authority on the issue of Islamic terrorism. So when President Reagan died, I felt, and for those of you who believe in God, you'll understand this, and for those of you who don't, you can just scratch your head, but I felt like God was saying to me, This is your last chance. If you want to be a voice for Christians who are suffering under the scourge of Islam, if you want to understand Islam, this is your last chance. You have to go back and get properly credentialed. So, I've been to Bible college and I had a bachelor's degree that was not from an accredited school, so I couldn't even go on to get my master's. So I had to go back to school and get another bachelor's degree from the State University of New York in communications. And then I went on to a military school, Norwich University, which is one of the oldest military schools in the country, almost as old as West Point. And I got my master's degree in diplomacy with a concentration in international terrorism. So I focused like a laser beam on international terrorism, and the bulk of my studies for my master's degree was in Islamic terrorism. And I'm still doing radio interviews. I'm still a pro-life activist. I was doing I was leading the effort to try and save Terry Schiavo's life. Fighting against homosexual marriage. Meanwhile, I'm in college, and then I'm in the university getting my master's, and I stumbled onto this very intense truth. And it is that Islamic terrorists see themselves inside of a 1,400-year-old storyline, a script, if you will, a narrative. So when I saw this, I'm reading these stories from Muhammad's life, and then I'm seeing what ISIS or Al-Qaeda is doing, or Boko Haram, or any number of Muslim terrorists, Hamas, and I say, I know what they're doing. I see what they're doing. I know what they're quoting. And one of the things that I realized, and this will be of help to your viewers and your listeners, is that the Quran is not the main source of the problem. So when I started reading the Quran, it's a very difficult book to understand, and we can talk about that later if you want. But I came to see as I studied Islam, and by the way, all I did was study primary sources in Islam. I have literally never read a book by somebody who is against Islam. All of my studies, in fact, you can see books behind me for those of you that are watching on television, this is part of my library. Many of the books you see behind me are books, primary sources from Islamic authors dating back over 1,000 years. And as I studied those sources that are not the Quran, we're talking about the Hadith, we're talking about Sahih Muslim, Sahih Bukhari, Ibn Ishaq, Ibn Kathir, Al-Tabari, as I started studying these canonical sources of Islamic history and theology, I thought, wow, the problem is not so much the Quran. The Quran is a problem, but the problem is the example that Muhammad left. Because Islam, as a religion, is the aggregate, if you will, it's the compilation of the Quran and the example that Muhammad left. It's a mountain of evidence, a mountain of quotes. The Quran is a small book, but the Hadith, and these other books you see behind me, there's volumes. This is the tip of this spear, if you will. There's literally scores of volumes, millions of words, of tiny details of what Muhammad said, what he did, how he bathed, how he dressed himself, how he had sex with his multiple wives. I mean, the details are mind-boggling. So, as I studied those Islamic primary sources, I realized there's the problem. And we're not reading those sources. We barely, in the West, if we're interested, we'll barely pick up the Quran. But, you know, Osama bin Laden, if you can see pictures of him with walls of books behind him. Those are all Hadith. Those are all the sayings and the example and the deeds of Muhammad that are not in the Quran. It's a whole different body of literature. So, as I began to stumble into this, more like stagger into it because it was so overwhelming, I began to spend literally what has turned out to be years, reading primary sources on Islamic thought, the life of Muhammad, the Hadith, the siras, as they're called, the biographies, the canonical biographies of Muhammad. And I became, as in addition to being a pro-life activist, I became a student of Islam and Islamic terrorism. And because I'm a broadcaster, and I have, thank the Lord, I have a lovely television studio, a lot of great gear, we thought, okay, we're making a movie series. And we spent 2 years in production for the series, What Would Muhammad Do? Islamic Terrorism Explained. We spent 2 years and large sums of money. We had over 100 people working on this project from four continents. We have artists from around the world. We have ancient Islamic art that's been animated. We have voice actors from around the world. So part of it is me standing up and talking in front of the camera, but much of it is texts from this literature that I've been talking about, and then pieces of art that we commissioned. We have over 100 pieces of original art that we commissioned from artists around the world to portray scenes from Muhammad's life. And as you see these scenes, then you say, oh my goodness, now I know why Boko Haram is doing what they do with young girls. They're just imitating Muhammad. So I went from being a pro-life leader on a full-time basis to being a student of Islam, a student of Islamic terrorism, because I felt that God wanted me to do it. Mm. And it was it's been a rocky road. We don't have time to tell the difficulties and the death threats, multiple death threats, because of my work and my research and this film series. So
it's pretty brave of you, and I must I give you props for this. What Would Muhammad Do? The Shadow of the Sword. It's an extremely informative DVD, lays it all out. And I would urge again everyone to grab yourself a copy, voiceofresistance.org. You talk about an education, but to me, you're the smartest guy, the most intelligent guy among us in the room, so to speak, because you understand when you, for example, the terror attack at the Paris Museum, the Louvre today, the attacks that we've seen, well, over the last couple of decades, basically, you understand the motivation behind this, but you also understand the culture that supports this mindset. And I just don't think, first of all, I don't think many people get that, and I certainly don't think that the people in power fully understand it, or if they do, if they did understand it and they're operating the way they did. I agree. Or there's something else going on. So, okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I'm just really impressed by the work. And so we've got a lot to talk about. And I really want you to lay everything out the way you want to, because I think our listeners and viewers are going to be really blessed by your investigative findings. So basically what you're saying is it's the Quran, not really the central problem. It's the Hadith, the Sunnah, the work, or
the Quran is, because the Quran, for example, Muhammad ordered the slaughter of the entire Jewish tribe of Banu Qurayza. So his men gathered all the males together in batches. The Jews didn't know what was going on. And they brought them out in batches of 8 or 10 or 12, and they had them kneel over a ditch, and they cut off their heads. And this went on all day and all night. There was somewhere between 600 and 900 Jewish males that were slaughtered. The stench, the sounds would have been unthinkable of all this blood and carnage. So they would strip down the boys, the teenagers, and they would look for pubic hair. And if there was no pubic hair, they did not kill them. If there was pubic hair, then they decapitated them. Then they took all the women and children, and they divided them amongst the Muslims, and including sex slaves, and their houses, everything was all divided among the Muslims. Now, what's interesting about this is that in chapter 35 of the Quran, there is a reference to this event. And it says, God cast terror into the hearts of those who were your enemies, and they came down from their strongholds. Some you killed, Some you took as captives, and that you possessed a land that you had never set foot on before, for Allah is able to do all things. So this passage in the Quran acknowledges that the Confederates, the Jews, were captured. They came down out of their fortresses. They surrendered because they thought they were going to be exiled. They didn't know they were going to be butchered. And he says in the Quran, some you killed, some you took as captive, which is accurate. But the details aren't there. The Hadith gives the details. The biography of Muhammad, written by Ibn Ishaq, gives an incredible detail. So when you read that verse in the Quran, if you don't know the back story, if you don't know the history of what it's discussing, then you could glaze right over it. You wouldn't even know what you're talking about. But when you look at the Quran, I'm sorry, when you look at the Hadith and you see the details of how the Muslims gathered and had a trial what to do with all these Jews, because the Jews surrendered. It was 900 men. We don't know how many children. Would have been way over 900. All their wives, their daughters. And they had a trial of the Jews without any Jews present. And so a man named Saad was chosen by Muhammad to be the judge. And Saad had made statements earlier that he loved killing. He said, killing is dearer to me than sparing men's lives. Killing, murder, killing people, is dearer to me than sparing men's lives. So this was a man with some type of a murderous, psychotic edge on him. So he is picked as the judge. What do we do with the Jews? And he says, will you abide by my decision? Everyone says yes. And he said, does that include everyone who's here? Because Muhammad was standing over there. And Muhammad nodded. And he said, then I decide that their men shall be killed, their women and children taken hostage, and their property divided amongst the Muslims. Now, Muhammad and his men had never, you know, they were early on the wave of violence. This was, they had committed acts of violence, they'd killed people, jihad was becoming a part and parcel of what they were doing. But up till that point, they had been primarily driving the Jews out of Medina, sending them to Syria, primarily to Syria. But in this case, we're going to kill all the men. And so you can just feel the shock from Muhammad's troops. So Muhammad stands up and says, you have judged them with the judgment of God and his messenger. Because Muhammad called himself the messenger of God. So before any grumbling or any, are you kidding me? Could take hold, Muhammad stood to his feet and affirmed the death sentence. You have judged them with the judgment of God and his messenger. So his word was law by that time. So this is not a man who has lost control of his troops. You know, no one, this is not somebody saying, I didn't order him to do this. I didn't even know they were going to do it. No. This is a man who's in total charge. And he picks a man to be the judge who issues this genocidal verdict. He then says, yes, this is the judgment of God from the seventh heavens, he said. And it's the judgment of his messenger. So the Jews didn't have any representatives, right? They didn't even know what was going to happen. So they dug trenches in Medina. And they went and they began to bring out the men in batches. 8, 10, 12 men. And no one knew what was going on because they were not, it wasn't like they were behind a wall. They were in a completely different part of the city. The sounds could not be heard where they were being held captive in the courtyard where they were being held. And batch after batch after batch, they brought out these men and they cut off their heads. They decapitated them in cold blood. This was old men, teenage boys. One boy testified later in his testimony is in the Hadith because he became a Muslim. He said, they came to us and they searched for pubes. If pubic hair. They searched for pubes, and I was among those who had no pubic hair, and so I was spared. And now he's an adult giving his testimony about what happened that day. So these women and children were distributed amongst the Muslims. Muhammad took a woman named Rehana as his own sex slave. In fact, I wonder if we've got a sound clip. Do we have? I know your man Eric there. I don't know if we've got
Eric the check. Eric's
got a few up.
Is he checking
on
right now?
Yeah.
So
I know we worked on a few of them. So we'll see if we,
right. We could do.
That's amazing.
You know what you could do? Do episode 6, shot 4. This is another city. I'll give you the quick backdrop. This is another city called Khaibar. The Quraysh tribe was slaughtered. The men were all slaughtered, and the women were distributed as sex slaves. And a Jewish woman named Rehana was taken by Muhammad as his sex slave. And she died as a sex slave to him while she was there. So this other one that we're going to...
We have episode 6-4 here ready to go.
Go ahead, play it. We'll play this one. This is also very interesting.
Okay. Stand by.
Muhammad and his men conquered the predominantly Jewish city of Khaibar. After the victory, he told his men the terms under which they could rape the women.
It's not lawful for a man who believes in Allah and the Last Day to mingle his seed with another man's, meaning to approach carnally a pregnant woman among the captives, nor is it lawful for him to take her until he has made sure that she is in a state of cleanness.
Being in a state of cleanness means that she had her menstrual cycle, ensuring that she was not pregnant. After the Battle of Khaibar, Muhammad took for himself a sex slave, the beautiful teenager Safiya, after he had her husband tortured with fire to find hidden money and then had him beheaded.
The Prophet then brought Safiya, whom he had won from the war booty.
The Muslims said amongst themselves, will she, Safiya, be one of the mothers of the believers? One of the wives of the Prophet, or just a lady captive of what his right hand possesses? Some of them said, if the Prophet makes her observe the veil, then she will be one of the mothers of the believers, one of the Prophet's wives. And if he does not make her observe the veil, then she will be his lady slave.
There it is.
So, again, Doug and Joe, so that for those of your viewers who just joined us, in this series, we only use primary Islamic documents. And you can see, I know that most of your audience is audio right now, they're radio, so they can't see that the text is there. So you can hear these Arabic, some of them are voice actors, almost all of them are actually Arabic. That's why their accents are so thick. So the texts that they are quoting are on the screen. And so are the references. So when somebody gets this series, they're getting literally years, thousands of hours of research to show the pattern that Muhammad left on a great number of issues that impact us today. So this particular story, completely unprovoked, a lot of the Jews who had fled from Medina, where Muhammad was the absolute ruler, resettled in a town called Khaibar, and Muhammad and his men just launched an unprovoked attack, completely unprovoked. They went up, and they took one fort, one castle after another, and they killed all the men. And this particular girl, Safiya, was married to a man named Kinana, who was an elder. He was the treasurer. And he had just married her. She was still in her teens. All accounts say that she was just incredibly beautiful. And Muhammad tortured this man. They had him tied down to the ground, and they built a fire on his chest. They built a fire of flint on his chest to torture him, to get him to confess where the money was. So this was torture for money. I mean, let the full weight of that sink in. This is not, you know, waterboarding to find out if there's a terrorist attack. This is torture by fire to find out where money is. So he tortured this man to death, and then one of the other men in the army got Safiya. And one of Muhammad's lieutenants came and said, hey, so-and-so has got this girl named Safiya, and she is the most beautiful woman in the town, and she only belongs to you. Trust me, Muhammad, she only belongs to you. So Muhammad summoned her and summoned this other guy who got her. That, you know, she was his share of the booty. And he said to the guy, pick another woman, I'm taking her. So he took her and made her his sex slave, and then thought better of it and said, I'm going to make you my wife. And his wedding gift to her was her freedom.
Mr. Terry, if we could stop right there, we're up against our break, and we'll pick up right there where we left off. It's mind-boggling to think.
Primary source material is what he's referencing, by the way, folks.
Yeah, and it's disturbing. I mean, it is very disturbing, but at the same time, it needs to be talked about. It needs to be the light of day needs to shine on it so people understand the origins and the roots of what we are up against and what we are fighting today. Our guest is Randall Terry. He'll be with us till the end of the show. His website is voiceofresistance.org. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you could possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric's...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
New Year from all of us at Trading Post in the Woods.
We pray you have a healthy, safe, and prosperous 2017.
And we would like to thank all of you for welcoming us to the Hagman and Hagman family. You're all a very wonderful and special group of people.
Because we believe it is so important for you to work and acquire good health this year, we're going to do something that we've never done before as a thank you to you for your support. We're going to make something available that we believe everyone needs.
During the month of January, anyone who invests in their health by purchasing either our American Heritage Remedies Kit, our Survivalist Natural Remedies Kit, or $200 in individual remedies of your choice, we're going to give to you our crisis remedy, just in case, for free. Your health must be a part of your preparation plan. We're here to help you with that journey. May God bless y'all, and may God bless America.
Happy New Year!
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Hagman Report for Our special guest, Randall Terry, voiceofresistance.org. That's voiceofresistance.org. I'm just, you know, I watched that clip. Folks, the DVD itself is just amazing. The series is amazing. What we don't know, or what many people don't know, you need to know what you don't know. And Randall Terry fits that bill. Before we get back to him, oh, by the way, I want to mention too to everyone, I'm scheduled to be on InfoWars this Monday coming up. I believe it's 2 o'clock Eastern, just as an FYI. So if you want to mark that in your calendar, I'm going to be on with Alex this coming Monday for a few segments, I believe. We'll be talking about a number of different things. So that's InfoWars this Monday. Before we get back to Mr. Terry, I want to direct everyone's attention to their preparations, your pantry. Look in your pantry. You might have all the food that you need and water and such, but let me tell you something. You need a rocket stove. You need a rocket stove, not just any rocket stove, but a rocket stove from Minuteman, MinutemanStove.com. That's where you go to get it. In these uncertain, perilous times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for cooking. End of story. If you don't have one, you need one. That's where MinutemanStove.com comes in. Don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Eventually, the supplies are going to run dry. And burning wood, inefficiency, like over an open fire or fireplace, it requires a lot of manual labor. The Minuteman solves all of these problems. It's easy to use, to feed. Prepare your family. Prepare yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times a heck of a lot better. It's a handmade stove that's manufactured in the United States. In fact, in North Carolina, they're extremely rugged. They're serving with our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's really, folks, it's the best rocket stove on the market today, bar none.
Portable, yep. Light, yep. Easy to use, easy to clean.
And it's got a seal too, yeah. On it, you know.
And it cooks at temperatures that you would not, you'd have to build, you know, as my dad said, a big fire. In a space of just a few inches, and it's very
comparable to a kitchen stove.
Yeah, and it's very easy to use. MinutemanStove.com. Mr. Terry, before the break, you were telling us a story, and you were telling us how, you know, the Quran and versus a lot of these, the Quran won't really make a lot of sense. You won't get the backstories that you would by studying all this other material that you've talked about. You want to pick up where you left off?
I would. With your permission, can I show this to your viewers?
You can show anything you want. Yep.
Thank you. This is for those of you who are listening, I used to do radio and now I do TV. I like radio so much more. Radio is so much more engaging. It's 4 DVDs. So we have 10 episodes that are highly produced with voice actors and art. And then we have another 10 extras. We had so much material that we had to leave on the editing room floor. I said, I'm not doing it. I did all this research and there's no way that I'm not going to give this material to our friends, to viewers, to people in the military, to people in the State Department, to people in law enforcement. So, I'm going to give you folks this offer. And we give it to everyone. Complete 100% money back guarantee. You can go to our website right now and you can watch episode 1 for free. Okay? Watch it. And see the quality. All original music. Great voice actors. Animation. Artists from around the world. You can buy 1 set or 4 sets or 10 sets or 15 sets, 30 sets. And the more you buy, the cheaper the price gets. But number one, we give a complete money-back guarantee, no questions asked. And here's what's crazy. We've never had 1 set come back, ever. Now, this has just come out. We've only shipped about 4,000 sets. But the greatest testimony that we have that people love this is that they order 1, and then 2 weeks later, we get a check. They're ordering 6 or 10, or some people have ordered a case of 30. Because they say, I've never seen anything like this. And the truth is, no one has ever produced anything like this. you guys have had some experts on your show for sure.
Sure.
And one of Dr. Bill Warner, who is way ahead of me as far as knowledge of Islam, he's written 15 books on Islam. He watched the series and he said, Randall, this is the best production for TV or movies that has ever been done on the planet. Because the truth of the matter is, no one's ever done it. No one's ever taken the time to connect the dots from Muhammad's life to modern terrorists and to use images in a movie-like with a setting with animation. So I encourage people, it's four DVDs, and it's only $35 for four DVDs. You can get two sets for $60, four sets for $100, and give them away. Give them to your pastor, give them to your chief of police, give them to your elected officials in your area. But I promise you, you will learn more about Islam and Muhammad, and hence Islamic terrorism, than anything you've ever read in your life, anything you've ever watched in your life. And I know what's out there because I have a master's degree in terrorism. So I know what's there, and I know what we've produced is unique. So you'll be able to learn about anti-Semitism, when Muhammad went from being a peaceful preacher to a warlord. Because there was a time, in fact, maybe we should talk about that.
Sure.
You guys, all right. We've all heard, by the way, I've been sick, and so my voice is deeper and scratchier than it normally is, and I apologize. Please forgive me, Doug and Joe. The way you hear me in the movie series is the way I normally sound, and I sound like heck right now. We've all heard endlessly from Council on American Islamic Relations, who are deceivers and liars, okay? The CARE is, they're a front group for Islam, and they're deceivers. They're liars about the true nature of Islam. And they know they're liars, and I've debated them before. They will tell us, Muhammad was a man of peace. Islam is a religion of peace. Now, that is the truth, and it is a lie at the same time. And more importantly, it's a lie in the big picture, and here's how. Muhammad said he started getting his visions when he was about 40 years old, and he was living in Mecca. And he began to preach. For 10 years, he preached in Mecca and preached monotheism, that God is one. He denied the Trinity, and he said that the God of the Jews is the true God. The God of the Christians is the true God, but the priests corrupted the religion of truth and gave us the Trinity. And he condemned all of the idolatry that was in Mecca, because Mecca was a very important city for idolatry. He preached for 10 years peacefully. But towards the end of that time, his protector, his uncle, died, and the elders of the city were beginning to hatch a plot to kill him. So he fled to a city called Medina. And for a couple of years before he went there, he was saying, I'm a prophet of God. I'm commanding you to forsake idols, worship God only, and I'm his prophet, and protect me and give me the chance to proclaim the message that I'm supposed to proclaim. So he would be going to different cities or talking to different travelers coming to Mecca, giving them this message over and over. And finally, a group of men from Medina said, oh, you're a prophet? All right, you can come and you can lead us. That's literally how it happened. So he fled Mecca and barely escaped with his life, because at that point they were trying to kill him. Completely peaceful. That whole 10-year span, he was totally peaceful. And he only had about 200 converts. Literally, in 10 years of preaching, he had about 200 people that said, yes, I'll forsake idols. Muhammad is the prophet of God. I believe that there is only one God. So he gets to Medina, along with those followers that emigrated with him, and they attack a caravan. His men attack a caravan and kill somebody and steal the caravan. And Muhammad's people are flipping out, going, whoa, 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 we didn't sign up for this. And Muhammad said he got a revelation that killing was indeed bad, but what the Meccans did by driving the Muslims out of Mecca was way worse. So then he kept all of the stolen goods. Well, then another caravan was coming, a huge caravan. And he said, this caravan belongs to Quraysh. it will contain much wealth. Attack it. God may give it to you. And so Muhammad literally led 300 men into the desert to try and find this caravan and to steal it. So the Meccans heard about it, and they sent an army of 1,000 men, including 200 heavy cavalry. Muhammad's guys had about 60 camels, 2 horses. So Muhammad's men were greatly outnumbered, more than 3-1. And the Meccans were, now they're saying, we're going to kill this guy because he attacked our first caravan, killed one of the men. He's trying to take this caravan, and we've had it with him. We're going to kill him. So Muhammad's 300 against the Meccans 1,000. And they meet in conflict at a well called Badr. B-A-D-R. The Battle of Badr. And if somebody goes and watches episode 1, we deal with Badr. And episode 2 is only about the Battle of Badr. Because it was at the Battle of Badr that Muhammad changed from being a peaceful preacher to the warlord of jihad. And it was the first time, for example, that he told his men, if you die in battle today, you will be given paradise. And his men were like, man, we didn't even know we were going to fight. We came to steal a caravan. We came to get money. We didn't come to fight these guys. So he whipped them into this frenzy, and they won. They beat the Meccans, 3-1 odds. And most of the elders of Mecca were actually killed in battle. And Muhammad threw their bodies into a well and stood over their dead bodies for 3 days. Their body was just, it was disgusting. But Muhammad is standing over their dead bodies in a well, taunting them, taunting their dead bodies. So this is when he changed from being a peaceful preacher to using jihad. And there were two men, they captured 70 hostages of the Meccans. They killed 70 men, and 70 were taken hostage, and the rest of the Meccans fled back to Mecca. And he took 2 hostages who had been mocking him back when he lived in Mecca, and he brought them before him, and he had their heads cut off. And you can see that whole transition in episode 2 and 3, because episode 3 is about the killing of mockers. That's why they try and kill cartoonists around the world. That's why they killed Van Gogh. Theo van Gogh was killed in Holland because he made a movie showing how women are abused in Islam. And they cut his throat in broad daylight in downtown Copenhagen. So,
And Mr. Terry, when that happened, I just want to affirm the importance of this, especially for law enforcement listening to this,
yeah.
Homeland Security. When we were monitoring the locked password protected chat rooms of Islamic terrorists, sympathizers, and terrorists themselves, the Battle of Badr was referenced numerous times leading up to
Bingo. And we know, as Christians, we know the Nativity, we know the Resurrection, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus forgiving the woman caught in adultery, Jesus walking on water. In other words, these stories, we don't even think about how much we know them and how they're just part of the very fiber of Western civilization. We make jokes that are about Christ. Well, that guy's so arrogant he thinks he walks on water. That's referring to Jesus. Well, they don't have our stories. They have their own stories. And their central story is the Battle of Badr. It is to them, it is the most important battle, the most important event of human history. Because, now think about that. In human history, that battle was the most important battle and the most important event. Because they said that it showed truth conquering lies. Muhammad compared it to Moses leading the Israelites out and then God drowning Pharaoh's army in the Red Sea. So most of us have never even heard of Badr. And they live this. So if a Christian is reading their Bible and they're reading the book of Acts and they're reading the Gospels and they become really devout, well, what happens to them? if they're Protestant, they become like Charles Spurgeon or Amy Carmichael, or they become, if they're Catholic, they become like Mother Teresa. So, because we have our stories, we have our narratives, we have our storyline. So I want to be like the book of Acts. Well, they have their storyline. And their storyline is, I want to be like Muhammad at Badr. Because that was the great victory. And one of the passages in the hadith said that Muhammad, and this is almost a word for word quote, Muhammad and his followers forgave the pagans and the people of the book for their mockery until Allah commanded them, or as long as Allah commanded them to do so. But at Badr, Allah killed the pagans through Muhammad. And that's when Allah gave permission to Muhammad to fight. He no longer had to forgive people who didn't believe. Now he was ordered by Allah to kill them, to fight them. There was another one. There was another clip that Eric... Do we have time before your next
sure,
break?
Sure, yeah, absolutely we do. And folks, if you're just joining us, Randall Terry is our guest. What a tremendous education we're getting, and the importance of this, that we know this. We know the tactics of the enemy. It's so important. Voiceofresistance.org is his website. Highly recommend the DVD series, What Would Muhammad Do? As well as... go ahead, sir.
Well, let me give out a phone number. I can tell you that you may get through, you may not. If you get through to a live person, you can talk to them. If not, leave a message and we'll call you back. So you can go and order it online, which is the easiest to do. Go to voiceofresistance.com or .org, and you can watch episode one, and you can see all the table of contents, or you can call. There's people who still don't want to order online. So here's the phone number. 304-289-3700. So grab a pen and paper. I'll give that number again in a second. But I think that what we should do, Eric, if you're there,
he's always here.
Yeah, he's your go-to man. I've got Billy Bob here. We go ahead and play Shot 5, Episode 6, Shot 5. Now, what this is going to show us is how Muhammad's behavior that is not in the Quran, it and the Quran together make Sharia law. Mm. So we've heard of Sharia law repeatedly. You know, many hosts are talking about it. What most of us don't realize is that Sharia law is the composite of the Quran and the words and deeds of Muhammad that are in the Hadith, along with the consensus of Muslim scholars. And there are four major schools of Islamic Sharia law, and there's very little differentiation between them. For example, all four schools of Islamic Sharia law say that an apostate, a Muslim who leaves Islam and becomes a Christian, okay? All four schools of Islamic Sharia law say that the apostate must die. Some of them say he has to be killed immediately. Some of them say beat him, throw him in prison for 3 days, then give him one more chance to come back to Islam. So there's different nuances, but they all say he's got to die. So Sharia law is the Quran, the example of Muhammad, and the consensus of scholars. And I've got to tell you this one other thing, and then we'll play this clip. If you watch episode one of the series, we have quotes from the Saudi Arabian Constitution and the Pakistan Constitution. We didn't have time for the Egyptian Constitution, but both the Saudi Arabian Constitution and the Pakistani Constitution say that their laws are based upon the Quran and Muhammad's example. The Quran, over and over, the Quran and Muhammad's example in the Hadith. And then what we did in the extras reel is we went through every single Muslim constitution on the planet, and we showed that every single Muslim constitution is built on the Quran and Muhammad's example, which is why they are so oppressive. That's why they're so oppressive, because Muhammad's example, after the Battle of Badr, was brutal. It was unthinkable, as we're about to see in this clip. So in this particular clip that we're going to see, Muhammad's men had captured a bunch of women. And usually they killed the men. And then they would just rape the women. But in this circumstance, the men, for some reason, they hadn't killed all the men and the men were alive. And so Muhammad's soldiers were saying, well, can we have sex with these women or not? Because they're married. So we see the words of Muhammad. We'll see a Quranic verse, and then we'll see how Sharia law integrates it. And Sharia law specifically says that any woman who is captured by a Muslim army, if she's married when she's captured, that her marriage is immediately annulled and she's free to be raped. So, Eric, play that.
Here it goes.
In another account of Muhammad's brutality toward women captured in battle, we read this.
Allah's messenger sent an army toward us and encountered the enemy and fought with him. Having overcome them and taking them captive, the companions of Allah's messenger seemed to refrain from having intercourse with captive women because of their husbands being polytheists.
Usually, Muslims killed all the husbands. However, on this occasion, the husbands were still alive. Muhammad's men didn't know what to do, so they asked Muhammad if it was legal to rape these married women while their husbands yet lived. Muhammad said he got a revelation from God. Muslims were forbidden to have sex with married women unless they were slaves or captives of war, such as the women they had just captured.
Also forbidden are women already married, except those captives and slaves whom your right hands possess.
With Muhammad's approval and a Quranic revelation to justify their detestable crimes, his men proceeded to rape their female captives, young and old, virgins and the married. Those of Muhammad's men who raped married women could not be accused of adultery because all their marriages were annulled. They could not be accused of rape because the women were slaves. Based on these words and actions of Muhammad, Islamic Sharia law states,
when a child or a woman is taken captive, they become slaves by the fact of capture, and the woman's previous marriage is immediately annulled.
Okay. Now,
the woman's previous marriage is annulled. And by the way, those passages, you're going to hear in some of the other clips, ISIS in their magazine quoting hadith. ISIS boasts, you betcha we have sex slaves because Muhammad did, and we're following his example.
Exactly. And this is why, folks, it's so important to understand the tactics of the enemy. Terrorism is not a target. It is a tactic. And I just want to remind people of that. And, you know, Islamic terrorism, that phrase that the Obama regime had been so averse to. Well, welcome to the party, everybody. Now, maybe some people might understand why people like Mr. Terry and us, even to a degree, have to have security details. You start showing this stuff and start explaining what's going on here. It changes the game. It's a game changer indeed. Okay. We got about 2 minutes of the break. Go ahead, sir.
Well, when we come back, my man here is seeing all kinds of people saying, tell us about deception. Tell us about taqiyya. And we can do that when we come back.
Okay. Randall, if I can, while we have the time here, the title, What Would Muhammad Do? Is that a play from, you know, the What Would Jesus Do?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. It is. Free marketing. What Would Muhammad Do? And one of the reasons that we named it that was because we always talk about Islam and Islamic terrorism. Well, really, it's about Muhammad, because Muhammad's the one who gave the example. So, What Would Muhammad Do? Islamic Terrorism Explained. One of our ads that we're putting together says, is Islam a threat? The founder of Islam will tell you. What would Muhammad do? Islamic Terrorism Explained.
Very, very on target, very clever.
Is the reason, I mean, obviously, the reason the news media, you know, they talk about Islam being a religion of peace, and they talk about the Muslims being peaceful, and they won't even say violent radical extremism or radical Islamic extremists. Do they intentionally, do you think they leave this stuff out for purposes of brainwashing or fear?
I don't think it's either. You know, I despise the main fake news. I don't call them mainstream news anymore. We should just call them the main fake news. But they are stupid. They're lazy, too. Many of them are lazy. So when I first started into this study, I was going to do a thesis on whether or not media was able to cover Islam. Even able. Because they don't know what questions to ask.
Very true.
Wow.
We'll stop right there, and we'll pick up on the other side. Folks who have joined us late, our guest is Randall Terry. His website, voiceofresistance.org, and his DVD, as you can see on the screen, What Would Muhammad Do? It's a
Islamic Terror Explained, obviously. And you know something?
It's a four-part DVD, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, four DVDs. I got to tell you, if you're a law enforcement officer, a pastor,
yes,
grab a hold of this series. Grab a hold of this DVD, that is.
We talk about this all the time. Even in the Bible, it says, you know, beware of the devil's devices.
Yep.
We have to know our enemy and how they, you know, plan on destroying us. We'll be back with Randall Terry for the next hour after this. Stay with us.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God particle before CERN actually discovered the God particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.